There is a beast, a hound of immense size, with fur as black as heavens on a starless night. Fangs sharper than the finest steel blade, and large saucer-like eyes of red hellfire. This is a common description of the phantom hound, known as the Black Shuck.
Hello, thank you for joining me. I'm Tamsin Wheatley, and you're listening to Folklore. If you're hearing me for the first time, let me fill you in on what's going on. Last week, we followed Neil's journey to a ghost sighting in a pub called the Goddard Arms. While I met some lively characters and heard some interesting stories, which can be heard if you go and listen to that episode, there was very little evidence of actual ghosts. My journey wasn't completely wasted, and I'll admit, it was nice to step into the shoes of my old professor. It was like I was close to him again. I could almost imagine how he must have felt when he'd been there. But while there was an element of fun to my initial exploration, it didn't take long for the tapes to throw up something altogether more unsettling.
And I wonder if Eugenia liked marmalade.
It was such an odd little moment. What could it mean? Who was Eugenia, and what did she have to do with marmalade? And why did Professor Neil sound like that? I'd never heard him sound so nervous. I was a little unnerved, so I turned to the box of tapes and pulled the next one out, hoping for answers. What I got was a phantom hound known as the Black Shuck. Neil, it seemed, had been drawn to the story after learning of a supposed encounter with the beast in a small village in Wiltshire.
I'm sat in the old shock cafe, named no doubt from one of the alternative titles of the Black Shuck. Perhaps that would have been too on the nose. It would seem the Black Shuck is something of a local celebrity. The walls are adorned with paintings of the creature, and the cafe is far from the only place to have been inspired by it. I'm here to interview a couple of teenagers who claim to have had a run-in with the beast a few nights back. They're currently running late. At least the food here is good. Henry Neil, the date is the 4th of April, so just for my own sake, you're Abe Holbert and Sam Fleming, correct?
Last time we checked.
Wonderful. It's a pleasure to meet you both.
Thank you. You too.
Yeah.
Right, we're here today to talk about an incident you two had with the Black Shuck.
That's right.
Would you mind explaining exactly what happened?
Well, we was at a party, right? You know, like, small town, so there ain't much else to do. Anyway, it's all going down, and then you started getting sick, didn't you, babe?
Yeah.
She's a bit of a lightweight. Anyway, point is, I thought it'd be best to get home.
Right, and what time is that?
A little past one, maybe closer to two.
And had you been drinking?
No, sir, I was a designated driver for both of us. The roads here are pretty dark at night. It's easy to swerve off if you're not paying attention. Anyway, we're driving, and we've got the radio on, listening to some tunes or whatever, and then it starts, like, cutting out, you know?
The radio does?
Yeah. Plus, everything just felt weird, didn't it, babe?
It was strange.
How so?
I don't know. It was just freaky. And then, well, then I saw it.
Go on.
So I see something in the road. At first I thought it was like a shadow, like an overhanging tree. Then it moved. Like it was let down and then just stood up. It was the eyes I noticed first. Big, red eyes, big like saucers. And you saw it too, didn't you, babe?
Yeah.
Are you sure it wasn't just a dog?
Mate, how many dogs do you know have got big red eyes? And anyway, I had never seen a dog that big. Never. Only thing that snapped me out of its gaze was when she started screaming.
You screamed?
Yeah.
Then I swerved the car and just missing the thing.
Right. What happened next?
Well, we just sat there, catching our breath back, right? And I look up, and it was gone. Like it had never been there. So I get out to have a look. And she told me not to, though, didn't you, babe?
But that's how horror films start.
I'm still looking. Like, I had to know. Like, had I seen anything? I was giving up, but then I heard something. Like, pitter-patter of claws. And then it just starts picking up speed. And it's getting louder, and it's coming for me. And I ran back in the car, and I lock the door, and bam! Something hits the side of the car, right, babe?
Yeah. Like, on the side, making a rock.
Then what happened?
Man, I swear, I can just hear this sniffing.
Sniffing?
Yeah, man. And it slowly moves around the car. We can hear it.
What did you do?
Nothing, mate. I didn't do anything. I had never been so scared. I don't know how long it was like that. But I know it wanted to get in. It wanted us, man. And not just anyone. It wanted us. Me and Sam. That's why it was there.
Now look, I'm not going to sit here and pretend like that story is anything close to undeniable evidence of the fabled Black Shuck. Two drunk teens heading home from a party hardly seem like what one might call reliable sources, after all. And truth be told, I think Neil came away feeling equally as sceptical. But, admittedly, I found myself hanging on every word. My research showed a lot of conflicting information around the idea of the Black Shuck. Hellish hounds on moors is something that has a long tradition in British folklore. And it culminates with Sherlock Holmes' most famous outing, The Hound of the Baskervilles by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. But while much of what we might now consider part of the myth can be traced back to the world's greatest detective, stories that share similarities with the idea of a large black furry beast are hardly scarce. The Beast of Bodmin, for example, is an oft-cited version of the tale, a phantom wildcat purported to live in Cornwall on Bodmin Moor. While closer to home, Wiltshire itself is no stranger to the legend. Perhaps the earliest reference I found throughout the course of my research details an incident at Peterborough Abbey dated 1127, as recorded in the Peterborough Chronicle. The article states, "Many men both saw and heard a number of huntsmen hunting. The huntsmen were black, huge and hideous, and rode on black horses and on black he-goats, and the hounds were jet black with eyes like saucers." The oddity here, perhaps, is the consistency between various supposed sightings. Even Abe and Sam's shared details with other such tales. I was still reluctant to put much stock in the couple's account, but even if it wasn't true, it was a good story. And I wasn't ready to cast it aside just yet. I wanted to know more. So, after hearing the tape, I went online and had a look at what I could find. While I could find no trace of Abe, I did manage to track down some contact information for Sam. I sent her an email and, much to my surprise, within a few hours she replied, agreeing to meet with me later that evening. So, without much time to spare, I readied myself and headed off on the road that Neil had travelled some 40 years ago.
The town is beautiful. There's a lot of greenery here still. Old buildings. The church is truly a sight to behold. And there's a busy street market. I'm going to see if I can speak with a few people and pull on a thread and see what comes up.
It's a load of rubbish if you ask me, but it's good for business. It brings tourists in, don't it? Like Sally in the Woods or whatever.
Black Shuck is a dark omen. You don't want to go there looking for that. It's a sign of imminent death. My sister's father said he saw it once. Died of a heart attack a week later. God rest his soul.
Oh yes, big deal round these parts. Legend has it it attacked the church back in the day. Would scratch on the doors. You can still see the marks on there.
No, there's never been any incident of the Black Shuck here. What you've been told is referencing a story about the Holy Trinity Church in Bangay, where it was said that the Black Shuck burst through the doors and killed a man and boy. And as it was leaving, it apparently left scorch marks on the door. It's a well-known story, but clearly false.
I see. But what about these marks on your door here? If I may ask.
Those? It's believed the church was struck by lightning. The doors haven't been changed in over 100 years, so they're not in the best shape. In fact, the whole building's in disrepair. We just don't currently have the funds to replace anything but the communion wine.
Professor Neil's tapes made the place sound like it was bursting with life. When I arrived, the energy was significantly different. The streets were deserted, the bustling market all but gone. I tried finding people to talk to, but most wouldn't even look in my direction, let alone speak to me, except for one. An eccentric older woman. As wild as she looked, her views on the Black Shuck were even wilder. What can you tell me about the Black Shuck?
You remind me of someone who came here years ago. Of course, they had a real tape recorder and not a phone.
Oh, really? Do you remember them?
Not really. So many people come through asking about the Devil Fiend.
The Devil Fiend?
The Black Shuck, dear. That's what it means. Shuck comes from the word shakar. Did you not look it up?
I suppose I wanted to see what people around the legend thought about it before doing the heavy research. You'd be surprised how different the official accounts can be compared to people who actually live around the legend.
Oh, I'm sure I wouldn't. But don't go looking too hard for it. It'll find you. Everyone sees it eventually, and you'll want to delay that for as long as possible. It's a bad omen. Means the Reaper isn't far behind. You're best off going back to your books before it gets your scent. If it does, it'll stick to you like old jam.
I'm sorry?
Old saying, you know, animals like sweet things, and you seem very sweet, dear. Be careful out here.
Have you seen the Black Shuck?
Once, many years ago, just before the passing of my dear Harold. I thought he'd come for me, but no, he'd come to warn me not to prevent Harold's accident, but to prepare for it. Bad omen.
If she was making up the story, she believed every word she said. Of course, we often seek to find explanations when faced with loss, grief, and tragedy. To be fearful of the unknown is to be human, and there is no greater unknown than death. Anyway, without anyone else to talk to, I headed to a small pub called the Midnight Hound to meet up with Sam, the woman from Professor Neil's tape. So I'm sat here with Samantha.
Sam, please. Only my mother calls me Samantha, and that's only when I'm in trouble.
Right. So, Sam, thank you for seeing me.
My pleasure. And you said this is going on the radio?
And a podcast.
Podcast? Where did I get radio from?
I work for the radio.
Ah, that's it. Of course. Podcast. Nice. Means I can download a copy.
Sure.
So, you wanted to talk about that interview I did with... what's his name?
Henry Neil.
That's it. I kept an eye out for his book, but never saw it anywhere. What's he doing these days?
He passed away.
Oh. I'm so sorry. How did he die?
Some sort of cave-in.
I'm so sorry for your loss.
Do you still speak to Abe?
Oh, Abe. Wow, been a while. No, we broke up shortly after that. He had some substance issues and, you know, got caught. And it was all around a bad situation, so I'm glad I got away from it.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. I heard he's been doing better these days, though, but he moved some years back.
So, that night, when you saw the Black Shuck,
You mentioned in the interview that it was sat down in the road and then you saw it stand. I was wondering if you could maybe give me an idea of the sort of size it
was. I'm gonna stop you there, dear, if that's okay. We made it up.
Oh.
Yeah. We didn't see anything.
I see. So why did you make up the story?
Well, you see, that night I had been drinking and was pretty far gone, and Abe was supposed to be the sober one, you know? We would take it in turns at different parties on who would drive because, well, nothing's in walking distance around here, so I think nothing of it. It's time to go and he starts driving and I'm trying to hold my composure and notice that I'm feeling more sick than usual. So he's driving a lot faster than usual and then he loses control of the car and we spin out and catch the side of a tree.
He'd been drinking too.
Yeah. And it was his dad's car, so, I mean, he would tell everyone it was his, but it weren't. So he was drunk, and he crashed, and it just so happened it was on the road they say the Black Shuck haunts. So he says we should say we saw it, and that he swerved not to hit it. That way we wouldn't get into trouble.
Right, and why did he think that would work?
Well, everyone's so superstitious around here. But Abe would keep embellishing it. Lucky your professor came when he did, or he might have heard the version where Abe fought it off and heroically saved me from the clutches of its jaws. God. So stupid. Anyway, at some point I'm just like, look, enough is enough. And it was only supposed to be a silly story to stop his dad having a go at him for crashing the car. And he's making it out like he's George and the Dragon. Anyway, so I start setting the record straight. And at first, I'm the liar, right? But lucky for me, a few others come forward saying their stories were full of it too. Felt a bit bad about it, to be honest.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, obviously Abe's dad had a massive go at him. And there was a man some years back who claimed it caused him to crash. But that was all around the time all our fakes were coming out, so no one believed him.
Did you believe him?
Well, look, our story was fake. But that don't mean every story was, right? We were dumb kids. We didn't think about the consequences of our actions. A guy from the city driving a BMW and earning 60k a year? Why would you make up a story like that?
She was right, of course. Two teens trying to get themselves out of trouble is one thing, but a grown man with a well-paid job and a lot to lose is something else entirely. A quick Google search led me to an article, which in turn led me to an email address. So I sent him a message, giving him my phone number, hoping I'd get a reply. In the meantime, I decided the best course of action would be to check out the supposed location of these sightings. Something, it seemed, Neil had already done.
Phew. Crikey. A memo to my future self. You need to work on some cardio. I fear there may be more footwork required if we're going to pull on this thread. I'm still on the country road. It's not too far from the entrance to town. There's trees all around. That's quite a lovely sight. Right, markers. From where I'm stood, I can see the church steeple in the distance. The side with the clock is facing me, and about 20 feet away is a large tree stump. It's not a clean cut, so probably the tree fell as opposed to being cut down. And there's a small marker stone. It has... interesting. There's a symbol on it. Seen this before. It's rats. Can't place it. I'll sketch it. I'll look it up when I get back. Blimey, it's on the tip of my tongue.
As it turns out, this milestone looked familiar to Neil because he'd seen it before. Luckily for me, he'd folded his sketch into the cassette and had written down the location of a matching stone he'd spotted in a small village on the other side of the county. The symbol itself was peculiar. It resembled a rune, but not one I'd ever seen. It looked like an X with a zigzag around the sides. My own trip to the site, however, was far less constructive. I found no sign of any marker stone, despite being able to spot the church and, what I assume, was the tree stump Neil had mentioned. Furthermore, I'd arrived late, and it had started to get dark. I was in no mood to wait around for a potential sighting of the Black Shuck, The idea filled me with a sense of dread, and I could feel myself beginning to let my imagination run wild, seeing figures in the shadows. I was about to give up and go home when I heard the unmistakable sound of drunken singing in the distance.
Evening.
Hi.
You having a good time?
What's that?
It's a microphone.
Oh, I know you. You're doing that podcast, right? They was talking about you at the pub earlier. You've been asking all sorts of questions about the Black Shuck, right?
Yes.
Oh, better watch out. Bite your ankles off.
Hey, don't joke, man. I seen it.
Can you tell me about it?
I was coming home from the pub, like, walking this way, and I saw it up the road in the shadows. All black. Wouldn't have seen me if I hadn't have moved. Though I reckon it must have stood up as it saw me coming.
What happened?
Well, I just go in the other direction.
No, you didn't go after it.
You're joking, right? It was massive.
Coward.
All the sightings on this road, right?
Pretty much. This road has its history. Supposedly it's because of the stone, they reckon.
The stone?
Yeah, a little milestone. Used to be down there.
Had something weird carved on it. Always said the Black Shuck guarded something there.
I don't suppose this was the carving, was it?
Aye, that's it. Of course, they moved it and there's nothing there. Some people just like to make up stories, innit?
I didn't make it up, man.
Do you know what happened to it?
Council took it, I guess. It just wasn't there one day. Don't go by very often, so it could have been gone for ages before anyone even noticed.
Bloody council.
Village Council?
Yes, hi. My name's Tamsin Wheatley and I've been doing some research on the Black Shuck.
Ah, you'll probably have better luck calling the museum about that.
Actually, I'm calling about a marker stone on the road leading out of town. It's been moved and I just...
A stone?
Well, it was like one of those milestones. Probably would have required some machinery to dig up. I wondered if you had a record of the works or a reason someone might have had it removed.
Oh, yeah, I know the one. Well, there's no records, but we wouldn't have done anything without it.
Can you be sure?
Well, of course, it's not a council road.
Oh, really?
Yep, privately owned she is.
As it turned out, something called the Lewis Estate owned several pieces of land in the area. So I contacted them to see if they might be able to offer an explanation, but all I received was a standard response email thanking me for my interest. I was, it seemed, at a dead end. I decided that if I wanted to explore this any further, I needed to check out the other stone. While I was on my way, however, I received a rather interesting phone call.
Yeah, I got your message. Listen, I don't need people like you digging this back up. Your kind had their chance back then, and all they did was embarrass and harass me with this. I told my side of the story all those years ago, so don't ever contact me again. You hear me?
It was clear then that my line of Black Shuck sightings had more or less dried up. Thankfully, however, I had the stones to keep me occupied. Unfortunately, when I arrived at the location of the second stone, much to my disappointment, I found I was unable to find it. Something felt odd about this. Why would these two stones, each with the same symbol carved on it, both go missing? More importantly, perhaps, who would even want to take them? I was wandering along the pathway in search of my phantom stone when I came across a park ranger. And as it turns out, she had some rather fascinating information.
Okay, I'm recording. What was your name, sorry?
Sarah Stein. Ranger Sarah Stein.
So, you remember Professor Neil then?
Oh, you mean Henry? Nice man. Always liked him.
How many times did you speak to him?
Often enough. Once every couple of months he'd drop in for a coffee. And he was always interested in your stone. It's a marker stone, by the way, not a milestone.
What did he want to know?
Well, he didn't want to know anything. He'd just come and check on it. He'd tell me that the symbol on it fascinated him. I heard about his passing. That was sad. Sorry. I don't mean to dredge up old ghosts. Anyway, the stone. It was always there, and then one day it was just gone. Like someone had taken it in the night. What always baffled me was, Who'd steal a stone? It's a bit weird. And truth be told, nobody paid much mind to it. I don't even know if I'd noticed it if it weren't for Henry's interest in it. I mean, of course we notified the council and the police, but didn't hear anything from it. Who cares about an old stone? Other than Henry, of course.
Did it ever turn up?
Didn't think about it much, if I'm honest. And obviously, it's not back in its place.
So, someone just stole it then?
That'd make for an interesting story, wouldn't it? Though unfortunately, I think the truth is probably a lot more boring than that.
What do you think really happened then?
Simple. The council probably moved it and donated it to the museum.
Didn't you talk to the council, though?
Yeah. But one department doesn't talk to the other. So no one really knows their rears from their elbows, if you pardon my French.
Right. That makes sense. Anyway, I'll let you get back to your work. Thank you.
No problem. It's not like we're swamped at the moment.
Although I didn't find out anything new, it was nice to hear about Neil from someone who knew him outside of academia. I hate to admit it, but I never really considered Neil beyond his role as my professor, and hearing from someone who knew him in a more informal capacity made me wonder what other mysteries about him these tapes might throw at me. The more I thought about it, the more I realised I hardly knew Neil at all. Who was he really? What motivated him? And why had I, of all people, received these tapes? He had never spoken to me about his interest in folklore when he was alive. Was there something I was missing here? Was he perhaps trying to tell me something from beyond the grave? I don't know. But now, I was determined to find out all I could. Hi there, my name's Tamsin Wheatley. I'm doing an investigation on folklore for a podcast.
Okay.
I've been looking into some marker stones. I'm just down at the wreck in Burbage. There used to be one here, and it's gone. One of the rangers thought it might have been donated to the museum.
I see.
It might have been a few years back. No one here is quite sure when the stone was moved.
Let's see if I can look up the records. It was a stone, you said?
Yeah, like a marker stone. The kind that might have had a town's distance or something written on it.
One sec.
Thank you.
Right, I'm sorry, I'm not seeing anything here.
Do you have any marker stones there?
No. We don't have any stone exhibits.
Nothing?
No.
I see.
Yeah, stones tend to be heavy and difficult to move, so we don't touch them.
Is there anyone else I can talk to who might know what happened?
No.
Okay.
Is that everything?
Yes, thank you. So, I'd really hit a dead end this time. I was curious now, though. Why would he have kept returning to these stones? What was it about them that had him so intrigued? And why were there no records of them ever having been moved? Overall, it had been a strange journey this week. I'll admit I was a little disappointed to learn that the story on Neil's tape was nothing more than a fabrication. If anything, it's made me more sceptical. I must say, though, that it's curious so many of these tales share such striking similarities. While there is a part of me that wants to explain this away as influence from pop culture and recognisable imagery, that these stories would appear so far and wide across so many different periods of time and still persist even today, suggests that perhaps there may be more here than stray dogs, drunken ramblings, and tricks of the light. Could it be that there really is a black shuck waiting to show itself to us all as an omen of our inevitable fate? I don't know, and I'm not any closer to knowing. Moreover, the entire situation with the stones left me feeling dissatisfied. It felt like a peculiar rabbit hole to fall down. The fact that both are missing, seemingly with no trace, just doesn't sit well with me. I'm sure you could say that there's a simple explanation. Perhaps they were donated to the museum. Maybe a car crash caused them to break. Or maybe someone did steal them, as odd as it seems. Much like Sarah, I think I'd be inclined to forget all about this if it weren't for Neil's bizarre interest in them.
I'm beginning to feel like perhaps there is more going on here than I originally thought. Speaking of which...
Hi, Tamsin. Thanks for taking my call.
You're most welcome. So, what have you got for us?
Well, I heard you play that snippet of your old professor, the one about Eugenia and Marmalade or whatever, and I think I know who he might be talking about.
You know who Eugenia is?
Well, maybe. There was a woman from the Goddard family called Eugenia, Eugenia Kathleen. I believe she married Fitzroy Goddard. He was a military man, if I remember correctly. Anyway, he died sometime in the late 20s, and then she left the town and was never heard from again. Spooky, right?
Now that was pretty interesting. Of course, I have no definitive evidence that this is even the same person, but the Goddard family and the name Eugenia certainly do suggest a connection. Quite while Neil was so interested, I don't know. And what does it have to do with Marmalade? I'm still curious to see if I can put these pieces together. I found myself thinking about it a lot, and I will admit that it started to play tricks on my mind. A few nights after recording this episode, I thought I saw something in my garden. When I went outside, there was nothing there. Rationally, I know that it's just my mind playing tricks on me. But knowing that doesn't make it any less unsettling. Have you ever felt something in the dark that you were sure was there, only for it to be gone when you had a better look?
Of old, where the black shook house as the magic takes hold. Weave the spell into the land as you cast a circle round. Call upon the sixth sin and lay your curses down.
Thank you for exploring this mystery with me, Tamsin Wheatley. You've been listening to Folklore. To get in touch and share your thoughts, please search @folklore_pod on Twitter or find us on the official Folklore Twitter and Facebook pages. If you enjoyed the show, please like, share, subscribe, and give us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you found us to help us reach even more listeners. You can also join in the discussion over on our official Folklore Facebook group, or you can support Folklore and help make magic happen over on Patreon. And in exchange, you'll get access to all kinds of exclusive content, including some behind-the-scenes snippets, bonus stories, and extra interviews. Now, what does a skeleton, an archaeologist, and a marmalade factory all have in common? Find out next episode as I investigate the peculiar, strange case of the mysterious barber surgeon of Avery.
Take the left-hand path down to the Shire of old, where the black shook house as the magic takes hold. Weave a spell into the land as you cast a circle round. Call upon the sixth.